Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see. Nothing to see. Nothing to see.
Experimental radio produced by NASCAD University.
You are listening to Nothing to See Here, a program of experimental radio from NASCAD University. This episode is called A Can of Worms. Just before we begin the show, I want to give you a quick content warning. This is not to say that this program contains any offensive material per se. In fact, just the opposite. This content warning is here to advise you that this program does not contain any content. Now, knowing that you have perhaps turned into this show expecting that there will be content, and then perhaps discovering to your surprise this program has no content, we understand that this could be quite a shock. And therefore, we want to give you a trigger warning about the total void of content you are about to experience. We understand that the void of recognizable meaning may be disorienting or disconcerting to some viewers, and we strongly suggest discretion for viewers who have a low tolerance for nihilistic examinations of the total absence of meaning. We do not take this warning lightly. In a recent focus group consisting of 12 Zen monks, a psychotherapist, a wellness coach, and the entire philosophy faculty at NASCAD University, we recorded a non-trivial elevation of suicidal thoughts and a statistically correlated rise in general anxiety amongst the participants of this focus group. In follow-ups related to lawsuits that have been launched as a result of this focus group, we can now say that there is a direct causal connection between listening to this program and 2 divorces, 3 cases of road rage, 1 case of early onset dementia, and a widespread case of collateral heebie-jeebies. Given this and the disturbing results of a medical study undertaken by Dr. Raymond Hardcock and his research team of the Existential Medicine Program at Clark's College, we have to give you the strongest possible warning that the risk of listening to the following program is entirely on your own head. You have been warned. Just a little insight into the process here of the program that might explain how this program came to contain dangerous amounts of absence of content. We just want to acknowledge that the program did at first contain content, and then through advanced techniques that we have developed here at NASCAD University, we have removed all of the content from the radio show. We've basically scrubbed it clean, leaving it completely devoid of content. We understand that clinicians are now working at the Stanford Resiliency Center, trying to reverse engineer these techniques to assist with their therapeutic treatment of PTSD. This advanced sonic exploration is, of course, part of our commitment as part of this radio show to new and radical forms of audio experimentation. We are simply following in the footsteps of cultural workers from the artistic avant-garde who have come before us and pushed outwards at the boundaries of meaning. Our approach to this program, that has produced a startling new aesthetic category of pure absence of content, is in many ways indebted to our artistic forebearers. And yet we see ourselves as working in a different direction. Instead of pushing outward the boundaries of meaning, we have removed the boundaries, shrinking them until they have disappeared, creating a void of meaning that you are about to experience for yourself, if you so choose, because I must repeat that listening to this program has entirely to be a conscious choice that you have undertaken for yourself. We want you to explicitly acknowledge that you have been firmly warned that listening to this program is not at all in your best interests, and may, in fact, in certain situations, constitute a credible threat to your constitution, your state of mind, and yes, even your sanity. We hold ourselves entirely without responsibility for the effects of this show on our audience. We are washing our hands of it entirely, although we do hope that you actually enjoy this show. In fact, it's our dearest hope that the audacity and forceful nature of this content warning does not dissuade you from listening to our creation, as long as you think you have what it takes to stare into the inhuman void of existential dread and despair that this program exudes. It is, of course, an acquired taste, something for those of you with a more sophisticated palate that is able to discern and appreciate aesthetic flavor. We also hope that our attempts to properly forewarn you of the effects of this program has not provided you with a spoiler alert. Let us here and now assure you that what you are about to hear is entirely not what you have thought it was going to be. Although you have perhaps imagined an aesthetic experience that is comparable or similar to the approaching one, believe us when we say you will be surprised. So it should go without saying, even though we are saying it, that this content warning extends to those of you who don't like surprises. Although really, I mean, who doesn't like surprises? I mean, what's with that? I mean, come on. If you don't like a good surprise, I mean, why don't you just turn off the radio right now and go listen to that old Kiss record you got in grade 8 for like the 900th time? Come on, it's a radio. Get with the program. Also, a note, if you are trying to figure out, you know, like skipping ahead here in anticipation, we just want to say that we have not just removed the content from this piece by shifting the aesthetic focus to the form of the work. This is not some kind of formalist construct. In fact, I can declare emphatically that this work is entirely formless. And stating this, and now thinking about it a little bit, we should probably update the content warning by saying that this warning should cover both content and the form of the piece. Both are very disorienting, and you may not like it. But let's just say that this is a blanket warning for what you are about to hear. You are about to enter an unknown territory, and, you know, if you are okay with that, then yippee, let's go, but just want to be sure. We want to get that proverbial, you know, nod of the head, thumbs up, but as you know, this is radio, so we can't exactly see what you're doing. You know, like, if you don't like it, just turn the radio off, for God's sake. I mean, you don't have to listen to the show. It's up to you. We just thought, you know, you might like it. That's all. You know, a little experimental radio. What can the harm be in that, right? Yeah, well, except that this is a content warning, and we can totally understand that it's not your thing. Sorry. Maybe I was being a little bit sensitive there. I've gotten a little flustered. Yeah, and I mean, maybe you're like listening to this program in a cab or something, and you can't turn it off. Maybe you're coming back from the bar, you jump in a cab, and then on the radio, there's this experimental radio program that has absolutely no content. So let's assume you've been drinking a little bit, or maybe a lot. Well, yeah, it might be a little disorienting. So I guess in this situation, you could, you know, in an emergency, you could put your fingers in your ears and just go, la, 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 la. I find cotton, those earplugs, they work really well if you don't want to hear our program. I mean, I hope you will. We work really hard on it. I mean, we're not being paid or anything to make this program. But hey, you know, no obligation. I mean, you don't have to like what we do. We're just trying to give you a little heads up here about, you know, what you're getting yourself into, what you listen to. Nothing to see here. I mean, we say it's, you know, experimental radio. Whatever that means. I think basically that covers it right there. I mean, the term like experimental, we could just do it anything. As far as you know, we might be sitting here in the control room naked with Maria Abramovich tied to a chair blindfolded while we fill a bathtub with brightly colored machine objects. Yeah, look, I'm not saying that that's what's happening, okay? But, you know, before you call the station and say, hey, this guy's, you know, blah, blah, blah. We don't want to go down that street. You know, let's just say that when, you know, you take up experimental art, you have to, well, experiment. But it's not like we're irresponsible or anything. I mean, that's why there's this content warning at the beginning of the show, because we don't want to offend you. We don't want to get all up in your space if you don't want it. This is about consent, and this is about, you know, us here in Radioland reaching out and making a connection, you know, agreeing on terms. You know, even if you don't want to listen to the show, totally your choice, by the way. You know, we want to agree to disagree. This is how this works. So there you go. That's your content warning. Although a bit of a sidebar here, because I'm a bit worried that I may have left maybe a little bit of a bitter taste in your mouth with all this long rambling content warning. So I'm sorry about that. I just wanted to be thorough, you know, not get us into any trouble. But, you know, I also wanted to mention that as we were developing the show, we did have some meetings because, quite honestly, there was some pretty offensive stuff. I mean, yeah, even me, and I have a pretty high tolerance for, you know, stuff. You know, we discussed it. We put it out there. We tried to look at the whole censorship versus freedom debate. I mean, we went pretty deep on some of these issues. None of this is easy. There's no one-size-fits-all policy for this kind of stuff, and that's where we started working on this content warning. And, you know, whole can of worms. But on the other hand, you know, artistic freedom, right? You gotta balance it. So, at that point, I, you know, have to say it was hours and hours of talking about this stuff. At this point, we decided to go, you know, in another direction. We started to remove the offensive material. And then it's like, do you remove the tumor, or does the whole organ have to go? You know, it's like radio surgery. We had to, you know, let's go all the way. I mean, that's a legitimate artistic process right there. You know, erasure is another way of creating, you know, another way of making meaning. But I think, you know, we went one step further. We erased even the meaning created by the act of erasure. You know, Jacques Derrida asks, is it possible that something can have no meaning? And, you know, I think we've answered that question for you here tonight. Because the show you are just about to hear is completely without meaning. There's no content, there's no form, and as I said, there is also, you know, you know, nothing discernible there. You might think, therefore, that we don't even need this content warning, but we found that it's actually very disconcerting once you go down this path, you know, once you remove all the meaning. And so we just wanted to flag it, you know, just check it off, you know, check off the box of due diligence. Now you might think this guy is really building the content warning up. You know, what's the game here? I mean, is this some kind of tease? Is this whole trigger warning thing some kind of PR thing? But, you know, I guess I understand that. You know, you might be suspicious. I mean, that line of thinking is certainly a major marketing technique. You know, the content warnings, it's kind of like advertising, you know? It's like peeking behind the curtain here, or you know, striptease is we peel away the layers of moral indignation that enwraps and clothes the product of our creative work. But you know, we're all up to date with our literary theory as well. You know, when Roland Barthes talks about the death of the author, you know, he's saying that it doesn't matter that, you know, the intentions of the authors of the work. You know, it's up to you, the reader, or in this case, I guess, the listener. You know, you are the one who constitutes the lexus of meaning and the unity of the text. You know, to boil that down a bit, you know, is what he's actually saying is the customer is always right. And you can see how neoliberalism and POMO theory are really, you know, on the same page here. But even acknowledging all that, you know, we still have to say that there is no content. You're not going to be able to make any sense of this. You know, there's no unity to the text when you get it, because it really just doesn't have that. You know, we've gone around and around on this. We've examined it from every angle. This is just meaningless. I mean, what you're going to get is, well, nothing. John Cage used to say, I have nothing to say, and I'm saying it. And it's kind of like that, although it's really not part of the content warning, but, you know, it's a good story. So John Cage, he's the American composer who created this famous silent piece, 4 minutes, 33 seconds, yeah. So this piece has a score, and a pianist comes out to play the piece, but then for 4 minutes and 33 seconds, the pianist does not play the piano. Nothing. He just sits there, and you listen to all this glorious silence. You know, I guess you're supposed to have this aesthetic experience when all your attention turns to the immediate environment, you know, the concert hall or wherever, and you're supposed to, like, tune into reality, like waking up from some kind of art trance. Ta-da! Hey, you wanted to listen to music, but everything in the world is beautiful music. Anyway, our piece is not like that, really. I mean, there's no revelation, there's no lesson that our program is trying to teach you. So, years later, after John Cage had died, a British pop star named John Batt was releasing a record of pop music, and he created a completely silent track, and he labeled it 1 Minute of Silence. If you listen to it, it was just, you know, nothing. But on the album, he credited it as a collaboration with John Cage, the author of 4 Minutes and 33 Seconds. You know, he credited Bat Cage. And so the estate of John Cage sued him for copyright infringement. They took him to court, and you know, he was quite indignant about being sued for this silent piece, that for nothing, really. In his mind, nothing was nothing, and after all, you know, nothing is nothing, but, you know, not all nothings are created equal. You know, John Cage's silence is really different from other kinds of silences, you know, from some hidden joke track on a novelty record. Our piece, which you're about to hear in a minute, is more like Bat's piece. But, you know, less so, I mean. I just don't think you could sue us for it, really. Because it's completely without content. There's just nothing. Yeah. There's just a hole where you'd expect a radio program. You know, even if you're expecting the unexpected, you're still going to be surprised by this. You know, by what we're going to do for you after this warning. You know, interesting this thing about that silent piece that John Cage made. You know, he wanted to make elevator music, actually. You know, that's the space that he wants to work in. Forget the concert hall. He wants to do elevator music.
Hey, elevator. Take me to the top floor. I said, hey, elevator. Take me to the top floor. Mr. Elevator, elevate me. I'm going up to the top. I'm up and coming. Things are looking up when you're going up. Transversing space in a vertical direction. I'm pushing one button on this tin can. And that button is for the top floor. My destination as I improve my specialization. I see you down below. I see you got things on the go. Maybe you're paying some bills or getting some pills or having some thrills. But I don't know, because I'm moving in a different direction. I'm going up, up, up and away. French kissing the sky, tall in the clouds. I got a high purpose, a vertical surplus. Looking down on the town as I'm released from my earthly bounds. Don't shed a tear for the final frontier, cause I'm out of here, steering clear of this horizontal axis. All I ask you is to turn your eyes to the skies and see me moving up. I'm moving up. I'm going up, Mr. Elevator. Don't stop on any other floor. I'm going up to the top, looking out at the view. The panoramic jet set is what I want to do. I got aspirations for higher dimensions. My attitude is all about the altitude. Get on up. I say, get on up, Mr. Elevator. Elevate. Make it so. I've been down low for such a long time, lying on my belly in the mud. I've been down for such a long time. Lying on my belly in the mud. And when I rolled over, I saw the sky. And it was beckoning me, urging me, telling me the gravity had gotten me down. And that's where you come in, Mr. Elevator. Cause I'm going to rise up. I'm going to improve my standing. You have got to elevate me, pick me up, and take me places. Take me on an elevator ride. Mr. Elevator, take me to the top floor. I said, hey, elevator.
Take me to the top floor.
I said, hey, elevator, take me
top floor. Hey, elevator, take me to the top floor.
Hey, elevator, take me to the top floor.
Hey, elevator, take me to the top floor.
Oh, wow, when you said I was going to do an elevator pitch, I didn't realize that you meant we would actually be in an elevator. How many floors of... Okay, the film. Darian wakes up in a spaceship and has no memory of how he got there or why he is there. He searches the spaceship where he finds thousands of clones. People who look exactly like him, except that they are...
Third floor. Marketing department. Public relations. Product placement.
He's searching the ship, and he comes across one person who doesn't look like him, an exceptionally beautiful woman named Syl. And so he wakes her up, but she doesn't talk.
Fourth floor. Art department. Makeup. Concept art.
The woman, Syl, seems very alarmed that Darian is actually awake, he realizes that he's dying. You know, his skin is turning green, and so he's trying to tell this mute woman that he needs her help.
Fifth floor, production offices, food services.
Yeah, I mean, he knows that she knows how to save him, but she's not saving him, so she's trying to convince him, but then he notices that her skin is turning blue.
Sixth floor, script department. The writer's room is on your left.
So eventually, you know, he convinces her, and she takes him to the central control room of the spaceship. And he realizes that the spaceship is taking them to another
planet. Eighth floor, film theory. Deconstruction is on the right. Modal realism is down the hall to the left. Please note that psychoanalytic theory has moved to the new building in Northwood.
But he wants to find out who he is and what his backstory is. And so he hacks into the computer. He goes in this virtual reality simulator, and all of his memories come flooding back. He remembers Earth, and he remembers his childhood, and he remembers his mother and father. You know, all that kind of stuff is all flooding back in VR. And then he ends up, the last thing that he remembers is he's on this elevator, and he's trying to convince this guy that he wants to make a film, because this film is really, really important. And he's trying to make it
Remains. Computer simulation. Content aware shape-shifting. Delusions of reference. Retinoia. Dissociation. Transactional analysis. Repressed memory.
One.
Possible worlds exist. They are just as real as our world.
Two.
Possible worlds are the same sort of things as our world. They differ in content, not in kind.
Three.
Possible worlds cannot be reduced to something more basic. They are irreducible entities in their own right.
Four.
Actuality is indexical. When we distinguish our world from other possible worlds by claiming that it alone is actual, we mean only that it is our world.
Five.
Possible worlds are unified by the spatio-temporal interrelations of their parts. Every world is spatio-temporally isolated from every other world.
Six.
Possible worlds are causally isolated from each other.
Even as I begin this, I am limiting what is possible. Only this one thing happens when so many things could happen. What happens to all those things that might have happened? Where did they go? Were they not real possibilities? If they didn't happen, then were they any less real as possibilities? Did I just imagine them as possible outcomes? Perhaps I was just fantasizing. If they are real possibilities, then they would have to be unactualized possibilities, which is to say that if they are real, then they would have to be real even after they didn't happen. This means that we have to accept that there are more real things than can actually exist. So what is the process by which possibilities end up becoming actual? Things that are possible seem to exist outside of our experience. That is, if something just has potential but is unrealized, then we don't actually experience it. Does this make it any less real, though? Does this mean that a determination of potentiality is just a projection, a mental act, a fantasy? Are we the ones creating this reality out of the possibilities of what could happen? In many ways, we remove ourselves from our own experience. We see things happening from a certain distance. It is like we are looking at the world through a kind of camera we call consciousness. Like cinema, our consciousness places us within the world, like a camera with a particular point of view. We experience reality this way, like a movie. Every moment we exist is framed by memories of what has happened in the past and fantasies about what potentially could happen in the future. Never arrive at the moment we're actually living in because it is always trapped between the past and the future. We have no way of being directly in the moment. The past is distorted and warped by the imperatives of memory. The future is a projection of what we think will happen next. And the real moving instant of time is ungraspable. And so our life unfolds like a dream, a fantasy of our experience. So do possibilities exist? Are they real or just imagined? If possible realities exist out of the one reality we experience, then these realities exist without us. We have no access to all those potential universes where other things happen. Is this a limitation of our being? Are we condemned to a monocular view of all realities? And are these realities imagined by someone, or do they exist outside of our ability to imagine them? Is there a world of possibilia beyond our imagination that is as real as the real that we think we live in? The problem, of course, is that if possibilities aren't real, then the only thing that can happen is what actually happens. This, of course, corresponds to our actual experiences of reality. There's no way to know if that is the way that things really are. It is a lot like the ideas of the first astronomers assumed that the Earth was the center of the universe, because that's what it felt like to us. Perhaps we are caught in fate or destiny. Perhaps the idea of free will is just an illusion we like to tell ourselves, so that we can imagine that we can influence what is possible in our world. But is there one world that everybody exists in, or as many worlds as there are things to experience it? Do we have to accept, as David Lewis states, that there are so many other worlds that absolutely every way that a world could possibly be is a way that some world is?
Hey, baby. What kind of troubles you got? If you got troubles, you bring them to me, man. I got the solution. I'm gonna take the bullshit by the horns. Wrestle it to the ground. I got this. Cause there's more than one way to shave a cat, you know. And I've shaved quite a few cats in my day. You should come over to my apartment someday and see all the skinny ass cats laying around my apartment. All shaved up. Had to move out of that apartment. Cause my allergies were acting up. Now I'm living in this place on the edge of town. I call it cardboard living. No cats there. No time for troubles. Yeah. You like this coat? I made it myself. Real cat hair.
Say it, I'm opening a new can of worms. The sugar daddies litter the back alleys as I publish my bubblegum diaries on the underside of my schoolroom desk. Let's make like a tree and get out of here. These boots were made for slushy conditions, but right now they want to walk right over you. Should not have gotten that tattoo saying welcome inked across your back. But I like it when I come home from a long day at the office and I see you lying there in front of my door. So let's roam, Jerome. Let's cut a rug. Let's sever a toupee. Let's blow this popsicle stand and commit to getting our popsicles in a different location. Is calling me, and it just reversed the charges. I have a long distance relationship with the wind at our backs, blowing up our skirts as we shirk our responsibility and shrimp wrap our dreams in freezer bags. I've got an advanced degree in wasting time, wrote my thesis on the back of a napkin. Then used it to wipe the lipstick from my collar. I was making out with a princess of time in the back of the cinema. Can't remember what film we were watching. Maybe it was a kung fu film. And what I learned that day was that you just can't let life walk all over you, no matter what your tattoo choices have been. So come with me, my rugged friend. We're gonna make history. Or maybe some tabbouleh. I'm feeling kinda hungry.
Five, 7.5, 10, 12.5, 15, 7.5, 20, 22.5, 25, 27.5, 33, 2.5, 35, 37.5, 40, 42.5, 45, 47.5, 50, 52.5, 55, 57.5, 66.
And in those days men shall seek death and shall not find it. And they shall desire to die and death shall fly from them.
from the intensity of the purple, from your weeping, from the intensity of the purple that, from your eyes, from the intensity of the purple that gushes, in the brackets, from the intensity of the purple that gushes out, mine, from the intensity of the purple that gushes out, from the intensity of the purple that gushes out, your breasts, from your hands, from your neck, your dress, which is full of holes, your pillow, your room.
So now this lab in Massachusetts or somewhere, they have developed a thing where they have a voice bank, and everybody can add to the voice bank, and then the people whose voice, and then they try and actually they mold it.
Yeah.
So they take the people who have whatever the disease is, and they kind of sample them, and they connect them.
They give them a voice.
And so, and then they get to choose.
Yeah.
But it's also partially their voice.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
You know that Stephen Hawking was offered like an upgrade where he could get a better voice.
Yeah.
And he refused because so many people identify him as
that voice.
The vestual aspects of that technology.
The thing you're talking about is super creepy because you could alter all kinds of
Yes, I can.
And so the
Yes, I can.
And so the American government can use
this. Yes, I can.
And so the American government can use this in very suspicious ways.
But here's the thing. I think the Soviets were doing this. Weren't the Soviets doing stuff like this?
Oh, the military's probably been doing it forever.
We
probably had a robotic president for the last 30 years.
No. And we're looking at that again.
Yeah. Oh, he's not robotic.
No, he's not.
Spasmodic.
He's still standing there.
Yeah, so anyway, and so then I said to Brad Pitt, you think you're so hot? And he said, I'm just trying to fuck up David's thing. What's going on, David, and why are you doing that? It's making me feel very awkward.
Person closes his eyes so he can open them tonight. Inside himself, beneath the eyelids that sink with sleep, and that were already there, throughout the whole day, solely that there might be evoked, lowering their awnings at times. The always possible imminence of night in broad daylight. The possibility, if not the necessity, of escaping the solicitudes of wakefulness. What he sees is nothing other than night itself. For night, though a major difference from day, is no more external than it is internal. Day is wholly outside. Day is before our eyes, at the tip of our hands and feet, on our tongue, and in the porches of our ears. Night identifies outside with inside. The eye sees in it the underside of things, the back of eyelids, the invisible layer of the other side of things, the underpinnings, crypts, skins turned inside out. It is the world of substance, that which exists underneath, and itself exists on nothing else. That which is not accident or attribute, that is, it comes to nothing and refers or applies to nothing except to itself. That which is entirely its own, belonging to no other subject or support, to no authority or validation or justification.
According to President Nixon's secretary, Rosemary Woods. On September 29th, 1973, she was reviewing tape of the June 20th, 1972 recordings when she said she had made a terrible mistake during transcription. While playing the tape on over 5000, she answered a phone call. Reaching for the over 5000 stop button, she said that she mistakenly hit the button next to it, the record button. For the duration of the phone call, about 5 minutes, she kept her foot on the device's pedal, causing the 5 minute portion of the tape to be re-recorded. When she listened to the tape, the gap had grown to 18.5 minutes, and she later insisted that she was not responsible for the remaining 13 minutes of buzz. The contents missing from the recording remain unknown to this day.
Rosemary Woods.
It is widely believed that the tapes recorded a conversation between Nixon and Chief of Staff H.R. Haldeman.
Well, I'm not a crook.
Nixon said that he never heard the conversation and did not know the topics of the missing tapes.
People have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
Haldeman's notes from the meeting show that among the topics of discussion were the arrests at the Watergate Hotel. White House lawyers first heard of the now infamous 18.5 minute gap on the evening of November 14, 1973. And Judge Sirica, who had issued the subpoenas for the tapes,
one,
tapes,
two,
tapes,
three,
tapes,
four,
was not told until November 21st. After the president's attorneys had decided that there was no innocent explanation they could offer. Wood.
Rosemary Woods.
Was asked to replicate the position she took to cause that accident. Seated at a desk, she reached far back over her left shoulder for a telephone as her foot applied pressure to the pedal controlling the transcription machine. Her posture during the demonstration, dubbed the Rosemary Stretch, resulted in many political commentators questioning the validity of the explanation. In a grand jury interview in 1975, Nixon noted that he initially believed that only 4 minutes of the tape was missing. When he later heard that 18 minutes was missing, he said, "I practically blew my stack." Nixon's counsel, John Dean, has said that these recordings also largely answer the questions regarding what was known by the White House about the reasons for the break-in and bugging at the Democratic National Committee headquarters, as well as what was erased during the infamous 18½ minute gap during the June 20, 1972, conversation and why. A variety of suggestions have been made as to who could have erased the tape. Years later, former White House Chief of Staff Alexander Haig speculated that the erasures may conceivably have been caused by Nixon himself. According to Haig, the president was spectacularly inept at understanding and operating mechanical devices. And in the course of reviewing the tape in question, he may have caused the erasures by fumbling with the recorder's controls. Whether inadvertently or intentionally, Haig could not say. In 1973, Haig had speculated aloud that the erasure was caused by an unidentified sinister force. Unidentified sinister force. Others have suggested that Haig was involved in deliberately erasing the tapes with Nixon's involvement, or that the erasure was conducted by a White House lawyer.
You have been listening to Nothing to See Here, a program of experimental radio from NASCAD University in Halifax. This episode was A Can of Worms. This program was written and performed by David Clark and features the additional voices of Hassan Hanif, Chris O'Neill, Sarah Hartman Rowe, and Ken Schwartz. Sound design and editing were by David Clark. For more episodes of this program, please search for Nothing to See Here Radio on SoundCloud.com. Please check out our Facebook page, Nothing to See Here Radio. And stay tuned next week for more of Nothing to See Here.